Good morning. Good morning. It's a beautiful day out there. Happy Monday. In the 11 o'clock hour, we'll be joined by greater New Bedford's own Tim Dunn, who's a reporter at the Boston Herald. Check out all his articles. They're really groundbreaking at bostonherald.com. And it's always a great treat, not only for me, but also for Barry, to have access to the brilliant and plugged-in reporter Tim Dunn from the Boston Herald. He'll be here in the 11 o'clock hour. All right. On Friday, I was broadcasting from the district attorney's event at Whites of Westport, which limits my ability to play sound clips and other media, right? So when I'm on a remote, I can't do that. But I did bring up the fact that Donald Trump on Thursday had gotten into a discussion with a local New Bedford fisherman, boat owner, regarding the closed areas in the Atlantic. It was during a White House ceremony to open up more fishing grounds on the West Coast. But there was a New Bedford fisherman in that meeting. And my understanding, it is my belief, my informed belief, that how that gentleman, who you're going to hear from in a second, got into that room is because of Tom Hodgson, the former sheriff of Bristol County, who was the chairman of the Trump reelection campaign last time around, and the chairman before that as well. Tom Hodgson has been pushing. You don't think of Tom with fish, but Tom has been pushing very effectively for the fishing industry here in the Northeast to get a seat at the table with the Trump administration. So the president is listening. His staff, importantly, is listening, because nothing happens at that level without staff involvement. You get that. And so it's very important. Tom Hodgson's been using his contacts within the administration to push the case for the New Bedford, greater New Bedford, Northeast fishermen, okay, to get heard by the Trump administration. So I think that's an important part of history. I know it's an important part of history. And oftentimes, the reality of history has to take decades, right, for the historians, for the players to write their books. But I'll bring it to you ahead of time. And the reality of it is that what you're about to hear is because of the behind-the-scenes work of Tom Hodgson, all right, who's multidimensional, obviously, across multiple industries. He knows corrections. He knows immigrations. But he also understands the business community and the importance of the fishing industry. So he's been pushing. And this is part of the fruits of his labor. This is a clip from last Thursday. It's all over the internet, all over Facebook. Some of the local media organizations have picked up on it as well, since it happened on Thursday. As I said, I mentioned it on Friday, but I was unable to play this clip because I was on a remote, and we just don't bring that technical capability with us. So here is a clip from the Oval Office.
You get the time to do what you do, and representing us and helping the fishermen the way you've done, it's just, it's mind-boggling to me. Because I know you got your hands full, but putting us on that pedestal and backing up our industry the way you have, it's just phenomenal. And I got to say, I've been fishing since I was 12 years old, I've never been fired in my life until I spent a couple of months with this man. And and it was very humbling, to say the least.
You did a great job.
And I tell you what, you know, when I think about it, I was a better captain after that because I was very nice to my crew. I was very humbled when I was fired. And anyway, I just want to say, as for you, this is a crew member's cap. You can take that. You're one of us now. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Now you're going to hear it. I believe it's John Lee's.
We're farmers of the sea.
Not this clip.
Healthy protein. I'm from North Carolina, but we support you 100%. You've done more for this nation in the seafood space than any president before you in my lifetime. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, I'm Eric from Hawaii. United States fisheries are the best managed in the world. And this action is really about balancing, you know, the interests in U.S. exclusive economic zone. You can have both ocean protection under our laws, as well as sustainable fishing. And that's what this is about. And I think, Mr. President, you are the only president that has really stepped up in terms of supporting fishermen like you're doing. No other president we've seen, the administration that's helping us. And there's a lot more work to do because there's a tremendous seafood deficit in trade. Imports are undercutting us left and right. But seafood is healthy.
Well, they're taking it right out of your water.
Yeah, and seafood is a healthy food.
They're taking it from your water and selling it in to the United States.
That's right.
The whole thing is just crazy.
So, really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Yeah, please.
First of all, thank you, Mr. President, to you and your family for the sacrifice and the commitment to the country.
Thank you.
I'm in the sea scallop business. I don't know who likes sea scallops, but New Bedford, Massachusetts is a port that is recognized as the highest grossing revenue port in the United States. I don't know who knows where New Bedford is, but sea scallops, there's roughly 300 vessels, or 300 full-time vessels. They range from 85 feet to 100 feet. Six white came from New Bedford. And you talked earlier about some examples of stupidity or whatever. We have vessels that can cost anywhere between $3 to $5 million, and those vessels only work for 35 days a year. They sit at the rest of the time at the dock. So we need certain things that could help us, and I know that this, because of your executive order, and it's a game changer. That order is a game changer for us. And one more example, there's an area that, you know, like Frank mentioned on the Pacific side, but there's an area off Georgia's Bank that's 248 square miles.
Been restricted also.
Restricted.
Is
it's
it
the
now,
largest.
Is it now restricted?
It's restricted. It's been closed since 1995. And here we are, 29 years later, we can't even get it. It's the best scalp ground in the United States.
Sir, I spoke with the gentleman beforehand. We're going to fix this.
It's all nonsense.
But how do this? You talked about stupidity. How crazy is that? We haven't been able to get in there for 30 years, and it's been environmentalists.
Do other people get in?
There's lobster guys in there. There's
some cod.
Yeah, they cut it. Well, mostly the United States, but it's the best scald ground that we have in the United States.
How can they get in if it's restricted?
Well, they can get in. We can't. They won't allow scallop fishing in there.
Oh, I see.
So it's prohibited from us.
Crazy.
But there's, I mean, just think of a boat that we have that sits, and we've asked, we're working, and I just explained it to Secretary Lutnick about, we're right now pretty close to where we could easily take a permit and put another permit on it, but why should we let these boats sit at the dock for 330 days?
Yeah.
It's crazy. So
we'll look at that.
Thank you so much, and we appreciate it.
Thank you
so
much.
So I'm a federal advisor on this.
Okay. So I just want to stress again that the fact that that gentleman, I believe it's John Lees, was able to have a face-to-face meeting with Secretary Lutnick of the Commerce Department, which has a major role in the fishing regulations, and have a face-to-face conversation with President Donald Trump. That's because of Tom Hodgson. All right, he's my friend, you know that. He's a regular here on the program, and I appreciate him making the time for us. But I think that before history glosses it over, right, that wouldn't have happened without Tom Hodgson creating the channels, the communication channels, and standing with the President of the United States, Donald Trump, against incredible pressure, from many of you, actually, quite frankly. And by the way, I just want to mention, I've got multiple letters from Mayor John Mitchell on this same issue to various government entities. I believe one of them was Senator Mitchell at the time. No, I'm sorry, Senator Reed. Mayor Mitchell to Senator Reed. And, you know, John Mitchell's been pushing on this issue as well. And but you got to love the fact that they put a New Bedford guy in the room and he jumped right at the opportunity, right? Right at the opportunity. The president recognized him and he pushed not only for what to applaud the president for what he had done, but to make the case for opening up these closed grounds. So it has been a long time coming. You heard him. 30 years. There are millions of dollars in product that are literally rotting on the bottom of the ocean. Literally bottering on the ocean. All right. We'll have Tim Dunn here at 11 o'clock. 508-996-05. Open phones, guys. If it's on your mind, I want to hear about it. Make the safe choice this spring with Citywide Glass. Does your windshield have a big crack in your view? Did you wake up to vandalism overnight? Well, don't stress out. Call the pros at Citywide Glass. They can repair or replace your auto glass quickly and safely. And listen to this. Their mobile tech team will come right to you. Your windshield can be replaced while you're at home, at work, on the job site, even while you're shopping at a shopping center, at no extra charge. Life is busy. Let Citywide Glass make your auto glass repair easy. Citywide Glass, make the safe choice. Visit citywideglass.net. We'll be right back, right to the phones. It'll be a brief break. Stick around. Open phones. Turn your junk car.
South Coast Now with Chris McCarthy. Weekdays on 1420 AM and 99.5 FM. WBSL.
Welcome back. Happy Monday. We're talking about whatever's on your mind. Let's go to the phones. Good morning. Thanks for holding.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Good. What's happening?
Chris, you know, my hat's off to John the Fisherman. He's doing what the mayor should be doing. He should be right next to the president and talking about the concerns of the bread and butter of the city. Oh, yeah, Leo Schurkat in the first hour talking about that we're making a cut to the travel expenditures. How much was that in dollar value?
He didn't tell me.
He didn't tell you. You know, it's like giving you a burger with two pieces of bread, no beef in the middle. You were talking about this with Lenny.
Yes.
Here's the beef. You have a mayor year over year that's been spending this city into oblivion. And when he came in 2012, it was $283 million. It's ballooned over $500 million. And you had Mike Jensen on, very smart guy.
Yes.
And he said that our city, the gap is much bigger than the $32 million. I believe him. I think it's over $50 million. Don't forget, we got to borrow $4 million for potholes, for road repair, because we don't got the money. And they've allowed this mayor to spend year over year. So the health insurance with the unions, crickets, nothing was done. The pension plan that's going over year over year, nothing. They're kicking the road. It's business as usual, kicking the can down the road. $16 million are going up on our taxes. $16 million worth of cuts. They've allowed this mayor to spend money, millions and millions of dollars year over year. Our taxes have gone up 25% to 30% year over year. Well, this mayor comes on Wednesdays with his favorite music playlist. I don't give a crap about his playlist. I want this guy to balance the budget. He hasn't done it. He's spending the city into oblivion. And my biggest concern is they're not telling us the elephant in the room, big elephant in the room, is that we're much more than $32 million budget gap. He don't want to tell us that. That's the second shoe to fall that he just want. How do you go from $13 million in December of 2026 to $32 million gap? Think about that. And if you're running your own finances at home, your own bills, you mean to tell me you don't know you count how much revenue you got, what your bills are? You don't know what the hell, how much money you got? We're being lied to. I want to know where all this money's going. Phony baloney, Mitchell. Keep saying it's state aid. Yeah, that's part of it. Part of it's inflation, but part of it's on you. You're spending all our money, and then the city council comes in and make a ball. Well, I lost sleep last night because we only cut travel expenses. The guy, Shoket, can't even tell us how much he cut. $1 million? That's peanuts.
Again, he was in the car. I was pressing him to get harder numbers, but...
Right. Of course. I mean, you lose sleep over cutting expenditures. We've done nothing for the insurance to rectify that. Nothing about the pensions. Absolutely zippo. Nothing. And we're continuing. Then next year he's going to tell us, the mayor, well, you know, it's far worse than the $32 million. He's going to drop the shoe and say it's $50 million. Where are we going with this? Chapter 9 receivership?
Well, that would... be devastating to all the union contracts for the unions, what they've negotiated. I remember Chelsea in 1990 when Bill Weld was forced to put that city into receivership. They came in and ripped up all the contracts, everything.
Oh, absolutely. You know something? And in democracy, you can throw that out the window. You're going to vote for city council mayor when the state takes over. They got the pen, and then they're going to make the line cuts. The mayor and the city council too chicken to do. And then they tell us you're going to pay more taxes. That's the solution. Keep spending more. Keep going up on your property taxes and your small businesses. These mom-and-pop restaurants and these other small businesses, they're taking it on the chin. And what do they say? Well, you know, that's inflation. We got to cut state aid. We're going up on your taxes. Baloney. They don't want to touch the school budget. You know why? Because they're hooked on the money from state aid.
Yes.
You cut the school budget, you get less money coming in. You know what it is? It's a catch-22. It's a double-edged sword. You cut back, you get less money. Either way, you're in a hole. You know what I'm going with this, Chris?
Yes. Thank you for the call, my friend. Thanks for the contribution. I do appreciate it. 508-996-0500. Guys, elections have consequences. That's not just a slogan on the back of my t-shirts that were created by Hugh Dunn and Marcus Farrow and Jay Lanigan created those t-shirts. Elections have consequences, and we didn't get here overnight, and you're not going to get out of it overnight either. The mayor, to his credit, recognizes that you have to grow your way out of this, not your city budget, grow the economy to spread the burden out among all the different classes of taxpayers. And the best one to spread it out over, quite frankly, is the industrial and business class. They have the ability to send it on to their consumers to the degree that it's reasonable, right? So years ago, literally years ago, this mayor, working with the legislative delegation, so Chris Markey, Cabral, Mark Montigny, I'm not even sure Hendricks was there yet, but it certainly was there in the lately. Anyway, they took a piece of recreational land on Hathaway Road and converted it through zoning to be able to be an industrial area, an advanced manufacturing campus, okay, that will produce more tax revenue from the business community for the city of New Bedford and a lot more jobs for the region. Now, why did it take so long? Well, first of all, there's a lot of factors involved. We recognize inflation, you had Biden in office, all those problems. But locally, because that's all you can really control, locally, do you realize that that industrial land was held up in the city council property committee for years? Years. This potential increase in tax revenue, cash flow for the city of New Bedford was held up for years in the city council property committee. Who was the leadership at the time? Shane Burgo was the city council president. And Maria Fiesta, having a party on the taxpayers' dime, was the chairperson of the city council property committee. She lost an election to John Mitchell to be mayor. You, the voters, rightfully rejected her and reelected John Mitchell. Okay? In my opinion, her vicious jealousness for the fact that Mayor John Mitchell had ascended the political ladder faster and higher than she had burned her so badly, psychologically, emotionally, that she was going to stamp on everything that had John Mitchell's name on it. And if any of her colleagues tried to advance it, she would take it out on them as well. Okay? Now look, Maria Siesta, asleep at the switch, is gone for now from city government. She's still a very powerful member of the Democrat Party, the same Democrat Party that invited the supporters of the guy with the Nazi tattoo from Maine down to the Massachusetts Democrat Convention. But, in other words, there's a lot of blame to go around. But the fact that your economy has been stalled, there are other people to blame for it. The mayor, working with the city council, working with the, actually some of the city council, and with the legislative delegation, moved a piece of recreational land into the industrial sector, changed the zoning. This took a lot of work. And it was really held up. It wasn't until the new city council president, Ryan Pereira, placed Sean Oliver as the chairman of the property committee, did finally the city council move to open up that property completely for development. And look, a lot of time was lost. Tremendous amount of time was lost. Literally years have been lost. But you got to magnify that out, because the fact that businesses weren't looking at that property meant they were moving somewhere else. Okay? Financing packages were moved to other communities. Businesses, all the employees, all that tax revenue. And in part, some of it left the state. Now, because in the meantime, you've had all these disastrous policies under Governor Healy. So there's a lot of blame to go around. And I want to hear your thoughts on it. 508-996-0500. Whatever's on your mind. And again, in the earlier hour, I mentioned the Iran deal with the president. Look, I didn't think the deal that Obama got was good. I'm not going to be really too probably happy with what the deal Donald Trump has gotten. Okay, you know why? Because the Persians are not good negotiating partners, or maybe they're fantastic negotiating partners from their standpoint. They're looking to wait out Trump. They've been told that, literally, in person, by more than one Democrat, to include Massachusetts' own John Kerry, said, wait out Trump. Well, they've been doing this since 1979. So anyway, I'm optimistic, but I am very cautious. And not because I'm going to blame our government, but I'm going to blame, not that they care, the Iranians. So 508-996-0. We've got a bunch of people on hold here. Let's get to them. Good morning. Thanks for holding.
Good morning. I guess I'm less optimistic than you are. Run a couple of things by you. I used to do these agreements, memorandums of understanding, memorandums of agreement with the government, from government to government.
Okay.
This is nothing more than a handshake.
Right.
This is two people sitting down or two organizations saying, here's what we would like to see happen. That's it. There's no legal recourse. They can break it anytime. So I'm not optimistic because I think it looks good. It's a step, but it's nowhere near what I think should have been done.
What do you think should have been done?
I think they should have gone to at least a memorandum of agreement, which at least, the problem is with the understanding, there's no legal recourse.
Right.
None. Zero. At least with an agreement, there is. And the other thing that bothers me about this is, and I know you read the Globe, and so do I, so nobody else has to, but they had the whole agreement in the paper this weekend,
yeah,
line by line.
Yeah.
And one of them is, and this is what makes me laugh, so for years, we've heard people call in and say, and I guess it was Obama, he put pallets of money and he sent it to Iran and he gave them all this. He didn't give them money. He gave them back their assets, which were frozen.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're seeing in this memorandum, which I read yesterday, is the same exact thing is happening.
Exactly.
They're going to return like $12.5 billion in frozen assets immediately and then somewhere down the line. So it's just ironic to me that people get all upset about stuff, and then the same exact thing is going to happen in crickets. Nobody's saying a word about it.
Here's the thing. It is, as I said to you, I am not optimistic. I'm optimistic because the killing is stopped for now, but I don't think it's going to stand. These people have been like this since 1979. And we had to destroy a lot of German lives, a lot of Japanese lives, to get to some reasonable agreement with them. Actually, a very fruitful agreements with both countries. I don't think enough people, and this is sad to say, have died on the Iranian side yet.
Right. I just feel bad though because I think a lot of people were under the impression that the former administration gave our money. And I'll quote the way they put it out there, pallets of cash.
Well, it was
sent to Iran. That's not true.
No, they were pallets of cash. Whose money it was is in dispute. It was their money. It was frozen assets. But because of the American banking laws, unable to do business with Iran, we couldn't send a transfer to Iran. So they had to be cash and was euros.
Right. But the point is, people think that we, the United States, took money out of our taxes and out of our treasury and sent it to them. That is not what happened.
Right. But thanks for the call. Thanks for the contribution to the program. Excellent call. Correct. But it was pallets of cash. It was their money, but we had frozen it. If we chose not to give it back to them, they wouldn't have had it. But the gentleman is correct. You can read the entire agreement, not just in the Globe. It's all over the place. The memorandum of agreement. And like you said, it is just a handshake. Hopefully it gets moving in the right direction. But again, they have been at war with us since 1979. I don't think they're going to change their attitude. There's a lot of revisionist history on the bombing of Dresden, whether it was necessary. Certainly the dropping of the two atomic bombs on Japan, whether it was necessary. I happen to believe it was. I have the luxury, I was born in 1971, of being able to think that. Some of you, anyway, were around for it. I think a lot of revisionist history has been written. Oh, we didn't need to do it. It was done for a lot of other reasons. But certainly Japan has been an ally, a willing ally, as has Germany. Do we have to kill more Iranians to make them submit and kill off the fanatic leadership like we did with the Germans and with the Japanese and let the real people rise to the surface and take control? I really don't know. Probably, though. 508-996-0. Open phones like it usually. Remember, Timmy Dunn will be here from the Boston Herald in the next hour. Good morning. Thanks for holding.
Good morning.
What's happening?
Well, I'll tell you, there's one thing on my mind this week and one thing only, and that is the vote to rebuild the Old Colony Vocational School in Rochester.
Talk about it.
Because, yep, and this should be on everyone's mind. If you live in the town of Acushnet, Lakeville, Carver, Rochester, or Mattapoisett, this is the only thing you should be focused on this week and talking to people, because what I've been seeing is there's a lot more signs this time saying to vote yes on the school. And I just look at these people's homes and I say, are you out of your mind? You want to pay more taxes? What are you, crazy? I mean, and I especially love it when I see a house that's kind of in shambles and they want to pay another $800 in taxes a year. It's like, what are you, crazy? So, you know, I found a good place because, sadly, I don't know what's up with Mass Fiscal. The last vote, they were really aggressive and really sharing a lot of information. They've been very quiet this time, and I don't know why. I have put a call in, and I'm waiting to hear back why. However, I did find their Instagram account, Instagram.com/Fiscal Alliance, and people should be all be going on there and just seeing what Aaron Polansky is all about, because he was all up for green energy way before he even got to Old Colony. So he's one of Mari Healy's little green energy supporters, and that's what this is about. But I'll tell you, people better look at this, because their taxes, I mean, I don't want to pay another $800 in taxes. If this happens, my taxes are going to be like $7,800 a year, almost $8,000. Isn't that crazy?
It is crazy.
That's crazy. And you know, the really sad thing is, Chris, and I've mentioned this before, I could buy a home in South Carolina, the same size as my house, and my taxes, property taxes, would be $1,200. Isn't that a shame? It's really just extraordinary. I mean, I would be able to live so much better in South Carolina. And I have a cousin who just became, residents there. I don't know if they're going to be selling their house in Mattapoisett, but they may be. And I'll tell you, God forbid if this passes, you know, between this and then the election, if we don't get a conservative in the governor's office, I have to leave. And people say, oh, don't leave, stay and fight. I don't want to fight anymore. I'm done. I'm tired of getting fleeced. I can't, my pocketbook is getting fleeced. My pocketbook is empty. And I got to refill my stash. And the only way to do that is to go to a state that doesn't take advantage of you in every direction you turn. So this is something really, really serious for homeowners in these five towns. And they better pay attention and they better think about voting no. And especially in Rochester, we're asking for an override on Proposition 2.5. I hope Rochester residents are smart like many of the other residents around and vote no. But I wanted to run this by you, too. I happened to be in Fairhaven yesterday. And I saw the lovely little protest out in front of Fairhaven High School. Is that a weekly Sunday event with the no crazy people?
There's fairly regular here in Fairhaven. And hey, listen, I don't agree with them, but I do appreciate that they get out there and they have that passion for it, right?
Well, if only conservatives could
exactly
have such passion and get out in the same amount of numbers, we'd be doing something. But I give them credit, too. They get out there and they do their thing. You know, we conservatives, we need to kind of mimic what they do and hopefully create some passion in people. But I don't know what it takes. To get people to become passionate, what does it take to motivate them?
Well, you generally have to threaten their comfort level in terms of raising taxes, crime in the streets, things like that. To be honest with you, generally people will work harder to save $25,000 from being lost than they will to earn another $25,000. So generally you got to threaten their comfort level.
Yeah. Well, The old colony vote is going to, you know, threaten a lot of people's comfort level if it gets passed. They, you know, get ready and tighten up your belt, and good luck finding the extra $800 a year to pay. And that's just for the school. That's not even the increased amount in your taxes for the operating budget, because there's going to be more teachers, there's going to be more students, more maintenance. So that's just the tip of the iceberg. You're probably going to be looking at overall $1,400 a year when the school is finally built. So by that time, I hope I'm out of town, as they say.
Thank you for the call. I do appreciate it and the contribution to the program. It's a big issue. The vote will be on Saturday. On Saturday, it'll be the towns of Rochester, Acushnet, Mattapoisett, Lakeville, and Carver. If you go on the Old Colony High School webpage and you put in your town and an estimated value of your home, they will tell you what your tax increase will be if this passes. Okay? So, great resource is the Joe Pyers podcast. He puts it up on Facebook, it's on YouTube. Joe Pyers has a great podcast. He's a member of the school committee in from Rochester for the old Rochester Regional School District, but he's a resident in Rochester. And Joe Pyers is a really good interview with Dr. Mike Boucher, who's the chairman of the finance committee in Acushnet. He'll be here next Thursday, well, this coming Thursday, here on the program. But they talk about the override for the Build the New School. They talk about a lot. You got to check out Joe Pyers' podcast. And they talk about the potential for a Proposition 2.5 override, not just to build the school, but then to fund the operation of the school. That if Acushnet, the taxes, the contribution to Old Rochester, help me out here, the contribution to Old Colony under the new school, will go up to the point, according to the chairman of the finance committee, that the contribution may require a overall Prop 2.5 override, like the kind that just failed in Fairhaven. So there's a lot to ponder here when you're building a new school. All right, I got to take a break. I see you on hold. This break will be like a minute long, so stick around. We'll be right back.
This portion of programming on WBSM brought to you by South Coast Health, Advanced Medicine, more care. Back to Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
Welcome back to the program. Happy Monday morning. Beautiful day. Tim Dunn from the Boston Herald will be here at 11 o'clock. A lot of stories he's broken. You can check out at bostonherald.com. Back to the phones. Good morning. Thanks for holding.
Hey, good morning, Chris. Thank you for taking my call.
Happy to.
What you was talking about earlier about whether, you know, killing more Iranians.
Yes.
Like it's been going on since Cain killed Abel.
Yes.
There's no peace like that. Right. Those that live by the sword will die by the sword. The only way to have peace is in complete subjection to the Father. That's what Christ did. And those that do, that lose their life for his sake, will have eternal life.
Let me ask you a question, because you're a really knowledgeable guy on this subject, and I appreciate your calls. When, as you know, the Iranians don't believe in Jesus Christ. They don't believe in that type of God. They have their own religion. So shouldn't we just subjugate them and convert them at the sword? Isn't that really the best way to do it? I mean,
well, even the Jews that crucified Christ, that it says in Revelation 2:9 and 3:9, that are of the synagogue of Satan. And I'm a Jew too, but my King of Kings and Lord of Lords is Christ.
He was a Jew, right?
I'm sorry?
He was Jewish as well.
Of course, King of the Jews. Yeah. And Apostle Paul and Peter and John, they were also Jewish, and they were apostles. They were converted, filled with the Holy Spirit, and then they testified against them. The whole church, the word church means ecclesia, the called out ones. So calling you out of darkness into his marvelous light, it's not a temple built by man's hands, but by God, the many-membered body. If you look at Acts 6 and 7 and compare it with Isaiah 66, it gives you that insight where Stephen, he was called out. He was filled with the Holy Spirit, full of faith, and he witnessed against the Jews and all of that elk, the Senate of Israel. And for that, he was stoned to death. He told them what was going to happen before it happened, because they don't keep the law of God, which is the law of faith, but he did. That's what real faith is, which is a mystery that the world doesn't understand. 1 Corinthians chapter 4, Apostle Paul gives insight into that, what it really means, because those that are the real church, the elect of God, those chosen by God, they willingly lay their life down and follow Christ. They deny themselves and pick up the cross, because then you've overcome the world and the wicked one.
Hey, I appreciate your contribution to the program today. I always enjoy that gentleman's phone calls. He makes me think. Listen, when I said we got to kill more Iranians, you can listen to the transcript or read the transcript. I paused because it's really a barbaric thing to say, but it's real politics. I would never live my life that way, but I recognize that Donald Trump and before him other presidents, like the leadership of Iran, they've got a mission, and sometimes killing people is part of that mission. You know, for over 50 years, Bass Ready Rooter has been the trusted name in drain cleaning and septic maintenance all across New Bedford, Fall River, and Dartmouth, Freetown included. From emergency clogs to hydro jetting and camera inspections, the expert team at Bass Ready Rooter delivers solutions, same-day solutions, the right day with honesty and respect. You can get that sort of same-day solution from Bass Ready Rooter by calling them at 508-995-8012 or visit bassready.com. Have it on hand. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Emily.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. I'm Chris McCarthy. You're the audience. We had a big thing happen on Friday. Yeah, I was with the district attorney. And also his likely successor, Chris Markey, out at Whitesell Westport, but also at a much bigger level, SpaceX. SpaceX went public. The largest public offering of stock ever. By the end of the day, by the close of the market, we had our first trillionaire. Elon Musk, a trillionaire. Remember when the liberals were burning Teslas to protest Elon Musk? If you had a Tesla, many of you are Democrats who have those cars. You risked having your vehicle lit on fire by a member of the Democrat Party to protest Elon Musk entering government service. I mean, it's really, really strange. I never understand terrorism. I mean, I get what you're trying to do, but I would never think to become a terrorist. But many, many, many people out there, including you, you know who you are, contemplated it, thought it was right, cheered it on. Cheered it on. It's bizarre, but a lot, hopefully you've been paying attention to this SpaceX stock market offering. Made a lot of billionaires, millionaires. People, I was watching Ron Barron this morning. Ron Barron, an older gentleman, I guess he's probably in his 80s. I know a lot of people in their 80s now who are vibrant, very sharp. And but Ron Barron's in his 80s. And he was saying that he has an office. It's a family office that invests, okay? And his sons have done really well. He's done really well. So a couple of years ago, Ron Barron, who's an original investor with Elon Musk, really loves Elon Musk, really believes in him, okay? And Ron Barron decided that he would invest $12,000 every year for each one of his employees that makes less than $600,000 a year. That was 4 years ago. And he invested in Tesla, now SpaceX. He was a private holder of SpaceX, but anyway, I watched him announce this morning that $12,000 annual contribution today for his employees that make less than $600,000 a year. Each one of them now has that one fund. Each one of them is worth over $800,000. Okay? And that's because of Elon Musk. The most successful African-American immigrant to ever be. Because he's also financially the most successful person in the world. The fact that he's an African-American immigrant, right? Immigrated here from Africa. He's an American now. That makes him an African-American immigrant. He did it all legally. He's the most financially successful person in the world. Ever. Ever. Friday evening, he became a trillionaire. With all kinds of really interesting and improved technology. Right? Wild. Absolutely wild. Look, guys, we're going to shift gears to state events with Timmy Dunn, reporter for the Boston Herald, coming up next. He loves to take your phone calls, so by all means, feel free to do that. He broke the story on this pension fund and the fact that Healey wants to raid the state pension funds and the fact